97% or more of pregnant women who go into Planned Parenthood, their babies are left behind, torn apart, and dead in a violent, painful abortion. That's their business, and it's making them lots of money. Welcome to Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute, and we've got a special program for you today.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. Recently, we had a great victory in the fight for life as Congress defunded Planned Parenthood for 1 year.
Yeah, that was a huge victory, and today we're going to tell you why. But so much has happened in such a very short period of time that many people are a bit confused, and you, the listener, may be one of them, on what this means for the babies.
So today we're going to unpack the unfolding developments and help you understand the significance of defunding Planned Parenthood, as well as the legal battles that are currently raging on. Brad, I think it's best that we start actually going back a little bit before Congress did this to Medina v. Planned Parenthood, South Atlantic, because that's kind of where the defunding conversation first kicked off. The anthill was first kicked when the Supreme Court, in a great decision, ruled that states can exclude Planned Parenthood from their Medicaid programs.
Well, Victor, you're so right, because this is a big deal, and it paves the way for pro-life states to cut funding to Planned Parenthood, and it opens the door to federal legislation protecting taxpayers from being forced to prop up big abortion.
And this alone is a very big deal, because even without, now we're very thankful for the provision of the One Big Beautiful Bill, which we'll talk about, but even without that, this legal decision in and of itself is a great win for life, allowing that pathway for states to rein in their tax money and keep it from going to an industry where their primary objective is to take the lives of innocent babies. But Brad, as you know, there's another piece of this puzzle, which was Trump v. CASA involving universal injunctions. That was on June 27th, and it's going to be a theme of this legal battle, the situation with these injunctions.
Yeah, that's right. And these two pieces play an important part, as we'll talk about later. But on July 4th, Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and we were very pleased about that passage because it included a provision that bars Medicaid reimbursement for 1 year to any providers that perform abortions and got more than $800,000 in reimbursements during 2023.
And you know, this is one of those sticking points, because initially we were fighting for legislation that was a 10-year defunding proposal. And so whenever it got knocked from 10 years down to one, it left a lot of people scratching their head. What happened? You know, how did we lose 9 years? Because we're grateful for every single day that we don't fund Planned Parenthood. But the difference between 1 year and 10 is, you know, it's fairly significant. We wanted those 10 years. And so the answer to that, it could be very complicated, but the simple answer is there's a position in the United States Senate called the parliamentarian. It's essentially a staffer in the United States Senate. They answer directly to Senate leadership. So fun fact, they can be fired, they can be ignored, they can be replaced if we so choose at some point. But there is a deliberation that has to happen on the legislation, making sure that anything in the budget bill is primarily budgetary in nature. And so through that negotiation, the parliamentarian knocked off 9 of our years and dropped it from 10 down to 1. So the question, I suppose, now is what do we need to do to ensure that this isn't a 1 year or a one-off defunding, but to ensure that Planned Parenthood never has the opportunity to claw back that federal funding?
Well, and one thing I'd like to add, Victor, on the parliamentarian, this wasn't always a significantly powerful position, because in the past, Congress didn't use the reconciliation bill to approve so much legislation, important legislation. But now, because of polarized Congress, this is what we're dealing with. And I think Majority Leader Senator John Thune made a big mistake when he said in advance that he would not override the parliamentarian. I think that opened up the door for her to wield her power in more ways. But to answer your question, how do we we ensure that Planned Parenthood does not get this federal funding in the future? And first of all, President Trump needs to appeal the decision by Judge Talawani's theatrics, its judicial theatrics, activism on the court, lawfare, whatever you want to call it, it is inappropriate. But every year, Victor, we fight to keep the Hyde Amendment, and we've been doing that for decades in the budget, which prohibits taxpayer dollars being used to anything to support anything that supports abortion. This, however, the big, beautiful bill goes a big step further, and that's why we're so excited about it. But once Congress and the Americans realize the sky isn't falling if Planned Parenthood doesn't get its $2 million a day, it'll be easier to keep the abortion giant out of the budget.
Oh, absolutely, because now we're in a position where something has to change, and we know with as ineffective as Congress can often be in the bureaucratic bloat and all of the confusion, once something is done, it's kind of hard to undo it from time to time. And it's also worth mentioning, as we talk about the parliamentarian and all of this, the only reason that we had to go through the budgetary process and the reconciliation bill is, as you mentioned, Brad, the very polarized nature of the Senate right now. To get anything big through is very difficult because we have to meet the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. And at this point in time, pro-life votes, we don't have 60 confident pro-life votes. So getting this legislation through, I guess what you could say the old-fashioned way or the normal way, would be very difficult. So this was actually a testament to the pro-life movement and a very crafty way to get around that 60-vote threshold because it was entirely budgetary. There's no question about that. It's why it was allowed in. But we figured out a way. We had to adapt. We had to figure out a different strategy to get this through. But without, you know, if we wouldn't have to do this if we had 60 pro-life votes, which would be a fantastic thing. But the only reason that we had to even go through the reconciliation process in the first place is because there's a very, very high burden to get much of anything through in the Senate.
You know, it's a battle. It's a battle over everything. And it's a reminder to you, the listener, that your vote counts over and over and over again on the Hill, in the FDA, in every way that a pro-life administration is impacting America. I would not vote a dog catcher into office unless I knew he or she was pro-life because they all climb up their own personal ladder of success. And we saw Obama do it very quickly from community organizer to state senator to U.S. senator to sitting in the Oval Office. And he inflicted a lot of damage on America while he was president.
That's right. And speaking, ironically, of Obama, that's relevant when we get to this judge because Planned Parenthood, right after this legislation was signed, and they had promised to do this. We know one thing about Planned Parenthood. They will not go silently into the night. They're always kicking and screaming, and they're trying to figure out some kind of a way, whether it's lawfare or anything else. Planned Parenthood went shopping immediately. The legislation is signed. They told everyone they were going to do this. They went shopping for an activist judge who would legislate from the bench, effectively attempting to rewrite federal law that had just been passed by Congress, signed by the president. They go and they find this Obama-appointed judge 3 days after the law was signed. They have a lawsuit where they're constantly trying to do this. And the injunction that we get, well, we'll get into that later, but it's just ironic, Brad, to me that they tell everyone exactly what they're going to do. This is the blueprint. It's the same playbook that they use over and over. They didn't get their way. The American people voted in representative, you know, electorate that passed legislation, and Planned Parenthood thinks that they're going to rewrite the law.
Well, this is an example that we should follow on our side to be tenacious and use every opportunity. They never say never. They are always doing something to further their cause. Unfortunately, their motto is the end justifies the means. But it's worth repeating that this so-called judge usurped the power of the U.S. Congress and the President of the United States by legislating from the bench and participating in lawfare, which is an opposition to illegal laws just to get their way. And it has got to stop. But this is why you, the listener, need to be aware, as Victor said, the Trump versus CASA, which significantly reined in universal injunctions, is what's going to really help us out in this area.
Oh, absolutely. And for the timeline on that, that was shortly before all of this as well. We had the Supreme Court ruling of Trump v. CASA, like you said, greatly curtailing universal injunctions. That happened just on June 27th of this year. So it's fresh in the memory of Planned Parenthood. It's fresh in the memory of everyone in our judicial system, yet they still have the audacity and maybe the tenacity, I suppose, to still try and do this anyway. They're still going to try and knock down that door, and they still think that they're going to have this universal injunction, which is what we got. It was July 21st, and then it was re-upped later after that. This Obama-appointed U.S. District Judge, Indira Talwani, issued this restraining order and then turned it in on the 28th to a permanent nationwide injunction blocking this provision of the bill passed by Congress, pending all of the litigation and everything like that. They still step in and try and issue this nationwide injunction.
Yeah, she figuratively, not literally, but she spit in the face of Congress, the president, and you, the American public. And on the 28th of July, Judge Talwani issued a permanent nationwide injunction. And earlier, Victor, she only protected, in her words, protected Planned Parenthood facilities that didn't do abortion but were referral centers and had not gotten a budget or reimbursement of over $800,000 in the year 2023. But on the 28th, she just did a blanket endorsement. It's just an example of legislating from the bench. And it's clear, in my opinion, that she's following Planned Parenthood's guide. I think she's been being told behind the scenes, no, that's not good enough. Here's what you need to do. And I think they're shopping for a judge got them exactly what they wanted.
Yep. And every day it seems that she wakes up thinking that her britches are a little bit bigger than the day before. But, you know, HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, Brad, has been a very pleasant surprise ally, I would say, yes, to life in the last couple of months, he's certainly put his neck out in ways that I didn't anticipate to defend life. He had a scathing legal memo in response to what this judge was doing. I'll read a quote from it. He said, simply put, Planned Parenthood has no right to taxpayer money, and this court should not invent such a right. The court should uphold Congress's lawful exercise of its authority to decide whom it will entrust with taxpayers' hard-earned dollars. He then said that Planned Parenthood was, quote, attempting to supplant duly enacted legislation with their own policy preferences. That is about as close to a smackdown in words as you can possibly get. And he put it perfectly. That's exactly what they're doing. I think it's important that he pointed out that this is Congress's lawful exercise of its authority. The Constitution lays out very clearly who has the power of the purse, Article 1. It's not the judges. The judges don't have the power to tell Congress who they can and can't. That's not their job, is to go and tell the American people, really, because they're telling Congress, but we put them there. So they're telling the American people, too bad, we're going to overrule you, and we're just going to decide, no, you have to fund the abortion industry anyway.
Yeah. Well, an honorable judge would have never done this to start with. But after that scathing memo that you just read parts of, an honorable judge would have backtracked and withdrawn that challenge. But here's the thing I think every listener needs to be aware of, is what's happened already since that bill passed on July 4th. Planned Parenthood, I believe, knows that its judicial theatrics will not hold up in court. And it clearly shows in the wake of the passage of the big, beautiful bill. And I'd like to list some of those wonderful things that have happened. Planned Parenthood announced the closing of two abortion referral centers in Ohio. They didn't do them, but they referred to them to the big abortion mill in Cincinnati. Four Planned Parenthood centers in Iowa are closing, including the only center committing abortions, and that's a good victory. Planned Parenthood in Minnesota is closing four centers. Iowa and Minnesota combined are laying off 66 staffers. And early on, I've said that as soon as a bill like this passes, Planned Parenthood is going to hemorrhage staff. They won't be able to pay their bills, and their infrastructure is going to deteriorate. And this is evidence of that. Planned Parenthood in Washington, D.C., and another in Colorado have posted alerts on their respective websites that they can no longer accept Medicaid. And St. Louis Planned Parenthood has reduced the number of its administrative employees. It hasn't closed, but it's clamping down. And in Maine, the Maine Family Planning Center, not affiliated with Planned Parenthood, operates 18 abortion centers and has filed their own lawsuit against the big, beautiful bill.
Well, and I think, Brad, that last point there is important because we often say that this is defunding Planned Parenthood because they're the largest abortion chain in the entire country. But this is actually the entire abortion industry. This isn't just Planned Parenthood. This is locations like, you just listed the main family planning folks, where they're doing the same thing and they're getting our tax money as well. And so this isn't just impacting Planned Parenthood, it's impacting the entirety of the abortion industry. And going back for just a second to Planned Parenthood, they themselves, this is a bit of insight into why they're fighting tooth and nail in trying to go judge shopping. These strategies, really, like you said, I don't even think they believe that this lawsuit is going to work because they're already closing down facilities. They're already doing this stuff. It's like they know that at the end of the day, they're barking up the wrong tree, but they're going to have to try and do it anyway because this would be so devastating. Planned Parenthood executives themselves have admitted that this defunding could result in one third, roughly 200 Planned Parenthood locations being forced to close up shop. 200 locations. Talk about a blessing for the babies to have these facilities shutting down. And I'm curious your thoughts, Brad. I think that that is very clear why they're doing this because the listener may hear all this and it's frankly, in my opinion, pretty clear cut. They're not going to win this in the end. Why are they even trying? To me, the answer is because it would be so devastating to them and they know it.
Oh, they do. And it just points to their tenacity. They are going to buy every judge they can, and they've got a big budget to afford to do so with $2 million a day in taxpayer money going into their coffers. It is enormous what's at stake, and that's why we're seeing them fight so hard. And one of the things that Judge Talwani said in her ruling is, quote, "Patients are likely to suffer adverse health consequences where care is disrupted or unavailable." Now, for one thing, that's a legislative matter to decide how to spend federal tax dollars, not a judicial matter. But secondly, it's false. And either she's very ignorant about how things work, or she's lying. And either way, that's not a good thing for a district judge to reflect on. And in reality, what we have are federally approved community health centers across the nation providing a wealth of medical services to poor and qualifying patients, but they don't offer abortion. However, they outnumber Planned Parenthood 15 to 1. So will women's health care be hurt by this? No, it will be improved by this.
And that's an important point, Brad, because what I would anticipate to be one of the maybe reservations, even at the state level, right, that legislators may have is they may hear that talking point from Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood lies and they say, oh, well, abortion is only a tiny percentage of what we do. We're out here doing all of these other wonderful things, is what they'll claim, when in reality, we know abortion is their business. It is what they do. And this is made very obvious because if they wanted that federal funding, they could just stop. If it's such a small percentage, right, of all of the things that you do, well, just
Right.
stop. And then you can enjoy your millions of dollars because then there'd be no argument really toward defunding them because they wouldn't be doing the evil thing. And so, rather than stopping the evils that they're doing, they're married to it. This is so clear. They will shut the entire place down and not offer any, because they claim that they do all of this testing and screening and all of that stuff for women in need. But apparently, that doesn't matter that much to them because they would be willing to shut the whole place down and not provide anything if they can't do abortions. So it's obvious what their priorities are. But the concern from some of the legislators may be, well, what about those services? What about, what Planned Parenthood claims that they do for women? Well, that is so thoroughly debunked. That number 15 to 1. Planned Parenthood is outnumbered 15 to 1 by real healthcare places, not places that are a mirage. The so-called healthcare Planned Parenthood offers is a mirage. They do that just so that they can do abortions. That their business is abortion. They're outnumbered 15 to 1 by real healthcare centers that are actually in the business of loving and helping women, not just shoving them down a funnel toward abortion, because abortion's very profitable. That's why Planned Parenthood is so hell-bent on continuing to do this.
Yeah, and to your comments, I'd like to add that if you recall, Planned Parenthood claimed they did mammograms not too many years ago. That was until a pro-lifer called all the Planned Parenthood facilities and found out that not one does mammograms. They don't have the equipment, to do so. And the services they claim to support are dramatically decreasing, even STD testing and contraception. All of that is regressing by Planned Parenthood. And here's the thing that you need to be aware of. 97% or more of pregnant women who go into Planned Parenthood leave without their babies. Their babies are left behind, torn apart, and dead in a violent, painful abortion. And this is what they don't want you to know, but that's their business, and it's making them lots of money, which they won't admit to, of course.
So, Brad, let's talk about this because you had mentioned the Hyde Amendment. And this is another point of a little bit of confusion for some people when it comes to defunding abortion industry, because Planned Parenthood and some of their advocates will cite the Hyde Amendment, which is fantastic, the Hyde Amendment preventing tax dollars from directly paying for an abortion. And they might say, well, why do you need to strip our Medicaid reimbursements? Tax dollars are already not going to the actual procedure of abortion. But of course, we know funding is fungible. And so talk about that, why it's so important that we make sure that they're not getting any of our tax dollars.
When Planned Parenthood has a woman come in for an abortion, they bill everything individually. And those that aren't the abortion, even though it's directly related to it, then are refunded by Medicaid reimbursement. And they have to pay rent. They have to keep the lights on, the air conditioning running in summers like we're experiencing right now. And they cannot be separated out. There's no way that they can draw a fast line unless they have a separate facility and totally separate funding and books. And of course, that's not the case. We are looking at funding big abortion, and this is a big step toward ending that. Now, the Hyde Amendment specifically prohibits money from going to supporting abortion, but it is not all inclusive of what rejecting the Medicaid reimbursement would be. That is the big enchilada. That is the gold ring for Planned Parenthood, and they can't function without all of that federal tax money.
I'm personally not a big fan of our tax dollars subsidizing very many industries, certainly not this industry. Think about all of the things that your tax dollars are going to prop up Planned Parenthood, and the fact that without them, and we're seeing this play out as we already discussed, facilities closing, they're having to lay off staff and et cetera, without your tax dollars, they could not stand on their own 2 feet. And some of that, Brad, is because they spend so much money on legislation. They spend money on trying to go against pro-life political candidates. They spend money like they did in Florida, attempting, thankfully failing, but attempting to change the constitution of these states. Without estate money, they pour it in, trying to manipulate the game board. They do this stuff all the time, and your tax dollars are subsidizing those activities. We shouldn't be giving 1 cent to them.
Yes, I mean, we need to absolutely stop any funding, regardless of what it's for or where it's coming from. We need to cut them off. And in order to keep doing this, we've got to be ever alert. We've got to be connecting with our members of Congress in the House and our two senators. And that's why it's important for you, the listener, to have an avenue of communication to these individuals. Many people, Victor, think that, oh, what can I do as one person? But I'll tell you what, senators and congresspeople have said that when a handful of calls come into their district office on an issue, those in Washington, D.C. sit up and take notice because they know there are many, many, many more who have not contacted them. So reaching out to your elected officials is absolutely essential. And of course, we can't forget the most important thing, and that's to pray, pray, and pray.
What do you think is going to happen next with defunding Planned Parenthood?
Well, I think that once we demonstrate that the sky isn't falling if Planned Parenthood doesn't get our tax dollars, and then they realize that there are other better avenues of health care for women who qualify, for those in rural areas, for those who are poor and unable to access the general health care system, then the light comes on and they realize, we're going to be okay. Hey, we're going to be better than we were without Planned Parenthood. Women deserve better than abortion.
Absolutely. And to you, our listener, I want to encourage you to visit our website, lifeissues.org, where you can learn more about the defunding effort. You can learn more about how you can get involved and share that information, like Brad said, with your friends, your family members, your church community, your sphere of influence. Most of us underestimate the impact that we can have. So I encourage you to go to lifeissues.org, join us and get involved, and be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.